The Last Bastion against the CBC Barbarians, the longest-running classical music radio show in Canada, West Coast Classics. Rare and unusual classical music from all over the world, from 2,000 years ago to the present, all presented in its social and historical context. West Coast Classics, every Wednesday morning from 9 till noon on Co-op Radio.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Show here on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, May the 13th. Hey, it's Friday the 13th. Never realized that. I'm your host, Allison Cole, and I'm joined here today by my co-host, Carissa Thorpe, and our guest co-host, Tara Gardner. Welcome, Tara.
Hello.
And Alyssa is away today. There's a movement in the animal rights world that I just learned about recently, and that is the World Weeks for the Abolition of Meat, which is spearheaded by a few activists in Paris, France, and takes place all over the world from Europe to North America to South America. This event is held three times a year in January, May, and September, and the next World Week for the Abolition of Meat will take place this May 21st to 28th. We'll be speaking with one of the key organizers of this campaign on the show today, Florence Liebert, who will be telling us all about it and how you can get involved. And I guess activism is a key theme for today's show, and Mark Hawthorne, our feature interviewee for today, is no stranger to the world of animal activism. In fact, he wrote a whole book about it called Striking at the Roots, a Practical Guide to Animal Activism, for which he interviewed 120 activists from around the world to share their stories, suggestions, and advice in the book. I gave a review of this fantastic book last week and also announced a contest giveaway for it, which we will be drawing for on the show next week. So there still is time to enter. All you have to do to enter our draw for a copy of the book, Striking at the Roots, is to send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com listing one of your favorite methods of animal activism, and your name will be entered in the draw. You can also enter on our Facebook page, where I have a few posts already listed there announcing this contest that you can comment underneath with your entry. For the deadline for entries is next Friday, May the 20th at 9 o'clock a.m. Pacific Standard Time, so good luck. And back to our feature interview, Mark will be speaking to us today about his book and different tactics of effective animal activism. He also wrote a recent article in the April edition of Veg News magazine where he described in detail many of the shocking horrors of workers in animal farms and slaughterhouses, and he will be touching upon these issues as well on the show today. So, we have 15 double passes to give away for the advanced screening of the film Forks Over Knives that is happening here in Vancouver next Tuesday, May 17th. But before we get to that, Carissa has a review of the film for us.
I do. All right. So, Forks Over Knives is a new film that we here at the Animal Voices Radio Show have been talking about for some time now. From way back in January when Liberation BC sponsored a screening at the Vancouver Public Library that saw attendees turned away because of the turnout, to most recently during Allison's interview with vegan bodybuilder Robert Cheek a couple of weeks ago about his efforts to promote the movie across North America. When I talked with executive producer Brian Wendell back in January about the film, he told me that the response had been overwhelming, with most advanced screenings, complete sellouts, and often a standing ovation as the credits ran. If anything, it seems that the momentum has only been building. The movie's been getting all sorts of promotion on shows like, I think they talked about it on Oprah, and then it's been on the Dr. Oz shows.
Dr. Oz, yeah, 2 weeks ago, wow. Which was awesome. Yeah. It's the best Dr. Oz show I've ever seen.
Really?
Yeah, I don't typically watch Dr. Oz, but
well,
I was very
either,
interested
so
too.
That's not saying much.
If you haven't had a chance to see this film yet, you'll soon get your chance. The film will premiere here at Fifth Avenue Cinemas in Vancouver next Friday, May 20th, with another advanced screening this coming Tuesday, which is what we have the free passes for, and we'll be giving those away at the end of the review.
It's actually going to be at Tinseltown on the 20th.
Oh, is it?
That's where it's being run, but the advanced screening's at Fifth Avenue.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Well, now you know. So there will be another advanced screening on Tuesday at Fifth Avenue, and that advanced screening will feature an appearance by Rip Esselstyn, who is one of the firefighters that is featured in the movie Forks Over Knives, and he is also the author of The Engine 2 Diet. Forks Over Knives follows three average people, including the film's director, on their individual paths to healing through diet and their myriad pharmaceutical prescription, that their myriad pharmaceutical prescriptions for diabetes and hypertension are leaving them wanting for. And in the case of director Lee Fulkerson, his dependence on soft drinks and Red Bulls to get himself through the day. Also highlighted in the film is the strikingly similar paths that both doctors Caldwell Esselstyn Jr. and Dr. T. Colin Campbell followed that brought them to a plant-based diet themselves and to recommend to others through their respective research. Both grew up on dairy farms, and Dr. Campbell found while trying to get more protein to children in the Philippines, he realized that the country's wealthier children who were consuming relatively high amounts of animal-based foods were much more likely to get liver cancer, while Dr. Esselstyn found through his role as a top surgeon and the head of the breast cancer task force at the world-renowned Cleveland Clinic, he came to the realization that many of the diseases he was treating were virtually unknown in parts of the world where animal-based foods were not often consumed. Forks Over Knives presents a striking case for switching to a plant-based diet to better your health, with testimonies from many of Dr. Esselstyn's clinical patients, illustrations of numerous research studies and statistics, and input from several different leading experts in the field, including Dr. Barnard, and then there's also a short piece with Jean Bauer from Farm Sanctuary about just quickly about the role of animal welfare in terms of a plant-based diet. And Allison, have you seen the film yet?
No, not yet. I haven't had a chance. I'm going to be away during that screening next week, so I need to borrow the DVD, I think.
Okay. Did you get a chance to see it, Tara?
Yeah, I got to see it when Liberation BC did the showing of it, and it was really, really good.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it.
It was also really, I really encourage people to go and see it in the theaters, because I watched it again last week for this review, because I had an advanced screening copy, and I watched it with just one other person, and it was so good, but I sort of knew what was coming, so when I watched it at the library with everyone, it was really amazing when everybody laughed together, and it was really great. It was like, oh, this is a really entertaining film, and I think people will be surprised by that, and I think if enough people go out, I'm planning to go and see it probably next weekend when it comes out again, just to support it, and I think if enough people go out and it gets enough of support, that I think a lot of omnivores will start to watch it, and I think that's really who the film is for everyone, but I think that's who it's really important to have watch it, you know.
Yeah, I really want to see it with like some of my meat eating friends and, you know, people that have a different perspective, and see like if you still get the same laughs, you know, the funny parts, or you know, that kind of stuff. It's fun to see that.
Definitely.
Yeah,
I think it's great that it's even being shown in the mainstream theaters.
Absolutely.
Tinseltown, very mainstream, right?
I'm so really glad that they did a release a month or two ago that said, you know, we had said it was going to come out in March, but we're postponing it because we've got a studio that wants to pick it up, that wants to give it a bigger distribution. So I'm really glad that they did wait, and I think that's just really helped them. That's given them the opportunity for the Dr. Oz show and all those things, right?
Yeah, so. And I'm sure that was really hard to do, you know, when you have something like that, a movie that's so good, you just want it out there right away, you know?
Yeah.
Must have been hard to hold it back and wait and... But yeah, it paid off, I think.
Definitely.
Well, thank you for that, Carissa. And now we're going to do our draw. So we have a draw for 14 double passes. Last week, we actually said that you could call in to win some passes. And since I gave out the wrong phone number, only one person phoned the right number. And that is Patsy Liebig. And I just wanted to let Patsy know, if she's listening, that I had misplaced your contact info until this morning. So thankfully, I found it. I will be sending you your pass very, very soon. And so we're going to do the draw for 14 more 14 more double passes right now. And this is for the screening that's next Tuesday, May 17th at Fifth Avenue. I'm just mixing them up here. Can I have a drum roll, please? Okay. So I'm just going to go through these fairly quickly. And lots of entries here. And I'll go through the next 14. So I will announce them. So this is for you and a friend. Bring a mediating friend, please. Melissa Balfour. Yay. Friend of mine. Congratulations, Melissa. Number two, Sarah McEwen.
Congrats, Sarah.
Number three, Bernard Poon. No, congrats. Oh, congrats. Okay, number four, Marnie Garrett.
Congratulations.
Yay. Number five, Haley Enns.
You're a winner.
Number six, Kate Montgomery.
Oh, Kate, that's my friend. Congrats, Kate. I hope you're listening.
Number seven, Marina Dawson. Awesome friend of mine, or Facebook friend of mine. Yay. Number eight, Simranjeet Kaur.
Ooh, yay.
Number nine, Gazala Busk.
Who are you going to take?
Number...
Decisions.
Ooh, number 10, Kate Mitchell there. I owed Kate something today for forgetting something, and there.
Now there, you made back. It up.
Yay!
Number nine, Sanjay Kapil. Yay, Sanjay.
Congrats, Sanjay.
Number 10, Jenny Lee. Number 14, number 11, Lisa D'Angelo. Yay, my friend. Yay. Lisa. What was that? Number, do you remember what number that was?
Uh-oh.
I thought you said 11? No.
You know what? We're almost done here. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. You know what? I think that was 13. I think I skipped some. So, one more. Tara Lee Gardner. Yay! Saving the best for last. Congratulations to you all. I will be emailing your passes to Forks Over Knives within the next day, so keep an eye on your email inbox, and I'm sure it's going to be a great screening.
All right, so you are listening to the Animal Voices radio show here on 102.7 FM, CFRO Vancouver Cooperative Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. So, Animal Voices upcoming events. Saturday and Sunday, May 14th and 15th, that's this weekend, the BC SPCA is hosting an open houses at their locations all around the province. The BC SPCA invites you to an animal-themed event of fun at their branches across BC. In addition to featuring hosts are... In addition to featuring pets looking for loving homes, activities will include shelter tours, education booths, and games for the kids. Food and refreshments will also be provided. The open houses are being held across the province. To find one near you, go to www.spca.bc.ca and click events. Saturday, May 21st, from 2 to 4 p.m., a book signing event by animal activist and author Mark Hawthorne, hosted by Nice Shoes at the Nice Shoes store located at 3568 Fraser Street, Vancouver. Mark Hawthorne, author of the book Striking at the Roots, will be signing his book at the Nice Shoes store. Mark Hawthorne works and volunteers with several nonprofit organizations, including Animal Legal Defense Fund, for which he writes Animal Advocate Newsletter, Food Empowerment Project, and Save a Bunny, which works with animal shelters in the San Francisco Bay Area to find permanent homes for rabbits. You'll also have the opportunity to meet and greet with Lauren O'Neills, founder of the Food Empowerment Project. Prior to her talk later that evening about food justice, you'll get to taste lovely sweets and treats by Sprout Vegan Bakery. We'll also be speaking with Mark later in the show in about 24 minutes. Saturday, May 21st, from 7 to 9 p.m., Liberation BC is hosting a talk by Lauren O'Neills, of the Food Empowerment Project at the Vancouver Central Library, 350 West Georgia Street, Vancouver. Lauren O'Neills, founder and director of the Food Empowerment Project, will be discussing how we can use our food choices to create a more just world, learn more about the food deserts and exploitation of workers and animals, environmental racism, and many other important issues from an expert in the field of ethical eating. Cost is free and no RSVP is required. If you want to find out more about the Food Empowerment Project, go to foodispower.org. We'll be having Lauren on the show as well to talk more about her work next week on May 20th.
That is right. And that's probably all the time we have.
Okay.
But so what do we do if people want to send in their events?
Yes. If you have an animal or vegetarian related event coming up and you would like to have it announced on the show, just email radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, which is called Animal Voices Vancouver.
Thanks, Tara.
All I really want to do is make a living singing songs, but how will I get on the radio when I cuss and swear and sing about loving women? I sing about loving women.
Made for lesbians by lesbians, the Lesbian Show on 102.7 CFRO has been providing music and news for almost 30 years.
You're my sister, you're my brother. When they ask you, you check other.
The Lesbian Show, Thursdays from 8 to 9 p.m. For more information, contact lesbianshow@yahoo.com.
You're just like me.
So today's first interview is with Florence Liebert, who hails all the way from Paris, France. She is an animal activist in Paris who organizes an initiative called the World Weeks for the Abolition of Meat and works to promote the demand for the abolition of the production and consumption of animal flesh throughout the world. Bonjour, Florence, and welcome to the Animal Voices radio show.
Well, hi, Allison. Thanks so much for inviting us to speak about the campaign for the abolition of meat. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, so I was very intrigued to find out about this campaign recently, which has been happening since 2009, I read. Can you tell us more about what the World Weeks for the Abolition of Meat is? What is this movement all about? Who is organizing it, and how did it get started?
Well, sure, I'd love to. Actually, the movement for the abolition of meat started in France in 2005. It was during an animal rights conference, actually about the history of the struggle for the abolition of human slavery. And the speaker realized that there was no such demand for the abolition of meat. And actually, everyone was really enthusiastic and wondered why no one had thought about it before. And then a group of people decided to start working on this new project. The idea was that this new project gave everyone a lot of hope on the long term, of course. And then people started writing a blog, which you can all visit if you like, meatabolition.blogspot.com. And animal rights organizations in France got interested in the project. And then people realized that the movement had to be developed on a worldwide scale, you know, given the scope of the project. So they decided to set up the World Day for the Abolition of Meat, and then gradually awareness events were held in various countries. And recently we've decided to organize more frequent and longer campaigns. So we created the World Weeks for the Abolition of Meat, which we try to popularize under WAMS, you know, W-W-A-M. And the idea is, as you said, to promote a political debate around the idea of abolishing the production and consumption of the flesh of sentient beings. So we're really trying to address society as a whole about the ethical legitimacy of the practices involved with the production and consumption of meat. You know, the people that started the movement had to come up with a name that would work. So meat is really, you know, the abolition of meat is used to represent the abolition of the consumption, the production, predation, hunting and fishing of animals, and also the banning of the production and consumption of eggs and dairy products.
That's a lot of great information. So the event has been running for the past 2 years, right? And can you give us an idea of which countries have been involved and what kinds of things? How have they been involved?
Sure. Actually, a lot of countries have been involved.
70 countries?
That's no, a lot. Actually 70, 70 cities around the world, all over Europe and both Americas, even Japan and India.
I read Brazil too. That I mean,
yes, yes.
A
lot different
of
types of actions have been organized. You know, from leafleting to information stands to demonstrations, panel discussions and debates, silent demonstrations. People are very creative. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And there are also giant human meat packages or meat trays.
Mm-hmm.
Shall I tell you about those?
Sure. I think I know what you're talking about. I think I've seen pictures of similar actions. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, volunteers lie almost naked in giant meat trays, and they're wrapped in plastic, just like meat trays that you can find in supermarkets. And they're covered with fake blood. The idea, as always, is to give out the message that all animals are made of flesh, blood and bones, and that mm-hmm. non-human animals feel pain and pleasure just like human animals do. And they have the right to live and live mm-hmm. well, so it's important to remind people that eating meat is eating corpses.
What kind of feedback have you been getting from the different animal activists around the world who have run this campaign in their parts of the world? How have they given you any feedback on how the general public has responded?
Yeah, definitely. Actually, we ask people if they can to send us reports after they've held an event. So overall, there's been positive feedback. Of course, some people are shocked and respond negatively because they feel attacked, and it's such an ingrained habit. You know, they feel defensive. But these days, people are getting more and more used to hearing about animal rights, and they welcome the idea. So overall, we've had a positive response.
So what is the general message that you can convey to people who, say, still eat meat as to why this campaign is important for the animals and for people themselves?
Well, I think figures speak for themselves. Worldwide, 64 billion animals are slaughtered for butchery each year. That's 64 billion animals. That's over 7 million animals that are slaughtered for food every hour. And then the number of water animals killed is even greater, hundreds of billions of water animals. You know, meat consumption causes more suffering and death than any other human activity, and it's absolutely unnecessary. So I think that's what I would say.
So you say that you're seeking to address all citizens and start an open debate without taboo about this issue. Why do you believe that society as a whole just often doesn't want to address the issue?
Doesn't want to address the issue. Well, I think that it really must take up a position on this issue, that a debate should lead to the political decision to abolish farming, hunting, and fishing. That's what we're trying to convey. That's what we're working on.
And what might you say to a person who believes that the foods that we eat and don't eat should be our own choice and not governed by law?
Well, I would say that using animals for our personal use is not a matter of personal choice. Eating animals is really not a matter of choice, nor is it a matter of taste either. The activities that cause these major harms to others don't belong to the liberty of individuals. And, you know, it's really up to society to abolish them by law.
Yeah, we live in a really democratic society, and I think in a society where people think that they have rights, they have the right to do whatever they want, they have the right to ruin the planet, they have the right to eat animals, harm animals, hunt animals, you know, shoot animals, and to take that right away from them in a free country that we live in here in Canada or the United States, for example, is a real insult and threat to them. So it's really, I mean, it's really quite, I just love that you're putting this out there because you don't really see that out there very much in North America, at least. You know, activists aren't saying, let's abolish meat. Activists are saying, let's eat more vegetables, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're going for more, I guess, the stance where, yeah, why don't, you know, choose to eat more vegetables instead of let's make the law abolish meat. So I find that really interesting about your campaign.
Yes. I mean, it's really essential. We really want to raise the question on a political level, you know, rather than promote vegetarianism or veganism. Of course, the promotion of vegetarianism or veganism is very important, and to refuse to eat meat can be seen as a political boycott. But here we're not asking individuals one by one to make dietary changes, you know, to decide to change their consumption habits on a personal basis. I mean, we all know that spontaneous changes are not sufficient to put an end to the butchery. Situation is familiar. I mean, any problems such as road safety, pollution, human poverty cannot be solved, in that way. So relying on the capacity of each person to modify her or his habits. So, and in any case, advocating the abolition of meat is really a logical extension of being a vegetarian or a vegan.
And I was just going to say, it's logical what you're saying. I was just going to say it's logical. You're saying that, you know, it's regulation, poverty and health issues and that. So why not the meat issue?
Definitely. And, you know, people who fight against bullfighting, for instance, don't simply ask individuals to boycott bullfighting shows. They actually demand the banning of bullfighting. Same thing goes for the opponents of other injustices and unethical practices. So why would the opponents of meat restrict themselves to giving individual advice?
So on your website, it says that many groups are mobilizing to promote the demand on ethical grounds for the legal ban of the production and consumption of animal flesh. Can you tell us more about this and who is involved in doing this?
Sure. People from different horizons, individuals, people in animal organizations. The movement doesn't belong to anyone, just like the movement to abolish slavery didn't belong to a small circle. So it's really an objective that we hope to attain and, a concrete horizon that can reunite us and hopefully galvanize our energies. And we really hope that people and organizations out there will know how to work for its accomplishment through their own ingenuity. So we're not looking to create a particular structure. A network between engaged individuals and structures is sufficient, it seems, to exchange information, material strategies, you know, and put our efforts together.
And do you think that calling for an end to the production of meat is a demand that can realistically be met, say, in our lifetime?
Yes, I hope so, at least.
I always say in 200 years we won't be eating meat, but in our lifetime? That's why I wanted your opinion on that. Interesting.
Well, we're hoping that it'll happen soon. Maybe, 30 years?
I mean, it's a very ambitious task, and I do believe that in the distant future, the people of our world will wonder why humans even ever ate meat. It'll be just a thing known only in history books, and I do believe that this is the way our society's headed, especially with recent media. It's all over the media here these days. I don't know about theirs. It's, you know, just getting rid of the consumption of meat. So if any of our listeners want to be involved in organizing an action for an upcoming World Week for the abolition of meat, what can they do to get started? What kinds of actions do you recommend?
That's very easy, actually. You really don't have to be an activist or identify as one. You can visit our website, meatabolition.org. That's meat-abolition.org. And you can get together with a bunch of people, or you can even set up an event by yourself. If you don't have time to prepare an event, you can simply print some leaflets or some brochures. We have material in English and in other languages on the website. Of course, you can create your own material, placards, artwork. You can have an information stand. That is, you can put out a table with material and people can help themselves. Sometimes people get worried that they may not be able to answer all the questions from passers-by. You can always tell them that the information is in the brochure on the website. Other events people can organize are demonstrations or parades where people, you know, can gather and hold placards. What's important, really, is to think about announcing your actions on the website, meet-abolition.org. There's a special button for that, and it just takes a few seconds, and it's really important so that other people who would like to join you can do it. And it's also really important if we want to motivate each other to organize actions and raise public awareness. And then think about coming back to the website and publish your reports. You can put pictures if you have any, and any information and media coverage.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show with us today, Florence. It sounds like a great organized effort that you're making here. And I think it's just really great to hear what activists in other parts of the world are doing for the animals. So the next World Week for the Abolition of Meat happens May 21st to 28th. Check out the website meatabolition.org. That's meat-abolition.org for more information on this international movement. Thanks so much, Florence.
Well, thank you so much for having us, and hopefully soon meat will be abolished.
Well, thank you for that. We'll have to have you on the show again one day when that happens. Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Sure, would love to. You take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
A reminder to our listeners that this is the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 102.7 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, BC, Canada. In the news this week, did you guys see that the new movie Water for Elephants, the star of the movie, the elephant Tai, in the movie she's depicted as being covered in blood and suffering from bruises and injuries, which is mostly computer generated, and the blood is fake, but Animal Defenders International this week released a video of Tai being beaten and stunned with electrical shocks and hit with large metal hooks before crying out in pain when she was shot with a stun gun while performing a headstand back in 2005 by her trainer. So
yeah. I saw that. It's really so upsetting, and I really think, you know, people should boycott the movie.
I was already planning to because I don't agree with having animals in movies like that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially, it really hits home with me. I went to Thailand for my honeymoon, and I stayed in an elephant sanctuary, and, you know, the stuff they showed us, and you know, it's just horrible, you know? Like, even paintings, you go to these countries and you see these animals being used as like tourist traps, and it's really, really upsetting. And, you know, we should really boycott this movie because it's just atrocious what they do to this poor elephant.
Yeah.
What's the movie about?
It's about a circus, and it's I think like Reese Witherspoon and Robert Pattinson fall in love, and I've seen interviews with them saying how much they loved the elephant and spending time with her, and how great it was to be with this majestic animal and everything. And ADI has said that they are sending the video to the stars, so what I'm hoping is that at least that brings some more. But it brings awareness to them, and hopefully they'll speak out about it.
Yeah, I really hope so, because Reese, I think, is supposed to be a vegetarian, or at least she was a vegetarian.
No, she's not.
She isn't.
I've confirmed that.
Really?
That was such a long time ago. PETA had that on their list, and since then, she's talked about eating meat many times on talk shows.
Oh, wow. Mm.
But I still like her.
Yeah.
Even though.
Yeah.
Even though she kills animals.
Well, I also have some good news this week. Tony, the 10-year-old Siberian Bengal tiger, who's been at the heart of an ongoing catfight over his living conditions at the Tiger Truck Stop in Gros Tete, Louisiana. I think we've talked about this before on the show in the news. He has had his freedom granted. On Friday, May 6th, District Judge R. Michael Caldwell of the East Baton Rouge District Court granted the Animal Legal Defense Fund's request for a permanent injunction against the Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries, preventing them from renewing the annual permit that allows Michael Sandlin to keep Tony as of this December 14th. So they said that they won't release him previous to that, but at least he will be free as of December 14th of this year. So his suffering is almost over, and that is a good thing. And quickly here, one other really great thing to note is that I think it was last Saturday, voters in Ecuador have brought an end to a 500-year-old tradition by approving a ban on bullfighting. As well as ending the killing of bulls in the ring, voters in a referendum held last Saturday also outlawed cockfighting. So that's really exciting.
That's a lot of progress for the animals.
Yeah, that's really great to hear.
Yeah,
for sure.
Hopefully we'll get some progress like that in Canada.
Yeah.
All right. Allison, I think you've got an interview now, right?
You certainly do. Today's feature interview is with longtime animal advocate and writer Mark Hawthorne, who will be making a book signing appearance here in Vancouver on May 21st for his book Striking at the Roots, A Practical Guide to Animal Activism. Mark Hawthorne has engaged in nearly every model of activism, from leafleting and tabling to protesting and animal rescue. He also works and volunteers with several nonprofit organizations, including the Animal Legal Defense Fund, the Food Empowerment Project, which works at the intersection of veganism, environmental racism, the abuse of farm workers, and other social justice issues, and Save a Bunny, which works with animal shelters in the San Francisco Bay Area to find permanent homes for rabbits. Mark is here to speak with us today about his book and effective animal activism, as well as the treatment of farm and slaughterhouse workers. Hello, Mark, and welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show.
Hello, thank you very much.
So first, please tell us about Striking at the Roots, A Practical Guide to Animal Activism, which is, you could call it one of my favorite all-time books on activism for animals. Why did you decide to write this book, and what was the whole research process for it like? I know that you feature the perspectives and advice from animal activists all over the world in this book, and I read that you interviewed 120 of them as part of your research. That must have been quite an enriching experience for you.
Yes, it definitely was. Well, first of all, thank you very much for your kind comments. I wrote Striking at the Roots because when I first got involved in animal activism, I couldn't find many resources for how to do it. It seemed like all the activists I knew either ran nonprofits or worked for one, and that's how they got a lot of their experience. But I learned a lot through doing volunteer work and networking with other activists, and a few years later, I think it was in 2006, there was a research firm called Label Networks that released this study that said that people in the ages of 13 to 24 years of age, most of them wanted to work for the nonprofit PETA, mm-hmm. or to volunteer for them. And about 30% of those people said that. And this was by a wide margin the most popular answer, which told me that there's a strong interest among this demographic in being active for animals. But what really caught my eye about the survey was that when this same group was asked why they're not already active, the number two open-ended answer was, I don't know how to get started. So clearly, many people want to make a difference for animals, but either don't have the necessary knowledge or don't know where to look for it. So I wrote the book to give these and other people a place to go for answers. And I was fortunate that I knew a number of activists, and they were able to connect me with other activists around the world. As you said, I interviewed 120 activists, so the research was pretty easy. Everybody was really eager to help because they saw the need for this book.
Mm-hmm. And what is the book about? Can you tell us what one might expect to find by reading the book? For example, how are the chapters laid out?
Well, it's kind of like a best practices guide. So mm-hmm. I devote a chapter to the main models of activism. So it covers leafleting. In fact, it starts off with leafleting. There's tabling. There's writing, which is everything from writing letters to editors, to doing op-eds, to writing articles. There's corporate campaigning. There's a chapter on protests and demonstrations, another one on sanctuaries, one on vegan food, so using vegan food in your outreach, and then there's one on direct action.
So I'm curious as to what common denominators you particularly noticed among the 120 activists you spoke to in, say, their tactics and strategies and their thoughts in why they do what they do for the animals. Can you tell us about that?
Well, if there was a common denominator, I'd say that it's that everybody brings their unique skills and personality into activism. Some people are super outgoing and they love speaking at colleges and other schools. Some people are passionate about rescue work and they devote their lives to animals in sanctuaries. There are some people who have the ability to go into factory farms or research labs and do undercover investigations. I'd say another common denominator is almost all of them have periods when they get discouraged. Not mm-hmm. everybody does or admits to it, but nearly all do. And I have a chapter devoted to activist burn.
Yeah. So why is direct activism effective and important? And why is it not enough for just a single person just to be a vegetarian or vegan and, say, do nothing more for the animals?
Mm-hmm. First of all, I applaud anybody who goes vegan. Choosing not to consume anything from an animal is wonderful, but because being vegan saves lives. But if you found veganism is a great path for you, chances are ethics played a part in that, so why not help even more animals by getting involved in activism? I can't think of an instance in which a person could not advocate for animals, so I suggest people find a form of activism that you enjoy and just take your skills, whether it's writing or hosting a radio show or public speaking or whatever, and apply it to activism. Even talking to friends about your decision to go vegan is a form of activism.
Yeah, that's a really great advice, I think, and thank you for that. I'd like to talk more about some of the strategies you present in the book with regards to effective animal activism. There's so many of them, ones that I can certainly relate to myself, as well as lots and lots of specific ideas that were new to me, which I really appreciated reading about as an activist myself. I think the ideas, suggestions, and resources conveyed in this book are a great way of sharing the wealth among like-minded people who are all here to help the animals. So let's start with leafleting, for example, which is what chapter one of the book happens to be about. I choose the tactic of leafleting because I think it's often regarded as one of the most effective means of animal activism to change the hearts and minds of the general members of the public. Why do you think this is?
I think it's a great combination of ease and effectiveness, which is exactly why I started the book off with leafleting. It's a great way to get your feet wet. While it's obviously a great way to get information into the hands of the public, it's also a wonderful opportunity for animal activists to talk about veganism and animal rights. So not only are activists getting practice discussing the issues, but the public is learning that most animal activists are actually pretty regular people. And you can leaflet on all sorts of things, from veganism and animal testing to fur and the exploitation of animals in circuses or zoos. I think it's effective because it is so simple. When you hand out literature, most of the work has been done for you. That is, the research and creation of the leaflet is done. The information is compelling, and people often hand the literature off to friends and family, which increases the effectiveness.
And especially if you're handing out the vegan outreach literature, as you write about in the book, actually, those booklets are ready to go. They have everything that you need in them, including the graphic images that, you know, could change the hearts and minds of people.
Right, that's a good point. And Vegan Outreach, their website's veganoutreach.org, they have a variety of literature, not just one single piece. So you can pick the one that you think is going to be the best for wherever you're going to be handing things out. And they offer these in PDF form, so you can actually look at it. So I recommend people visit them and give it a try.
Chapter 8 talks about the global reach of multimedia as a strategy for animal activism, and any activism for that matter, in my opinion. This book was written in 2008, and the power of multimedia as an effective activism tool is even more so relevant now in the year 2011. What are your thoughts on how our messages are getting across now via methods of multimedia, as opposed to before this was available, which was actually not that long ago? And where do you see this means of activism going forth into the future?
Oh, that's a huge topic.
In a nutshell.
I think posting videos online is one of the most effective tools we have. Images speak volumes about animal suffering, so when groups like Mercy for Animals in the U.S. or Animal Aid in the U.K. do an investigation at a factory farm or slaughterhouse, they can make that video available to the public on their websites and on YouTube, and the public response is amazing. When I wrote the book, I don't think anybody knew how much Twitter would practically become synonymous with social media. And this is only going to grow.
Right. Wasn't Twitter back then.
Right. I think
that could have been a chapter itself, right?
Right.
In 140 characters or less, though.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it could certainly be, and probably will be, covered in an entire book. But I think Twitter and other social media formats are just going to continue to grow, and the Internet's going to continue to link activists and help them get their message out to the public. I think a great example of how powerful the Internet has become is how Barack Obama used it in 2008 during his presidential campaign. He and his team pretty much perfected online fundraising by allowing people to make small donations, and he raised many millions of dollars as a result and surprised a lot of people. But I just want to note that I think also old-school methods like protesting and leafleting will always be around, and they'll always be important. There's nothing to compare with face-to-face interactions with the public. They need to hear our stories.
I always say that you need to reach people with a variety of methods because, number one, most people probably won't, they won't get it the first time they hear it, no matter what way it is, right? Via the internet or maybe face-to-face. But, you know, they say in marketing, you need to see the message 7 times before you're going to buy the message. So if people are being bombarded with these animal rights messages, you know, via different methods all throughout their lives, it's going to start finally sinking in, I think, and that message is going to be effectively conveyed. That's what I think.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah. Exactly.
I want to remind our listeners that you are listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 102.7 FM CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. So Chapter 7 discusses a method of activism that I think may be especially close to your heart, which is animal sanctuaries, shelters, and rescue centers. I know that you have been much involved with Animal Place Sanctuary in Northern California. Can you talk to us a bit about your sanctuary experience as a whole and what the presence of sanctuaries and shelters have to offer the public in advocacy for the animals?
Yeah, you're right. Animal sanctuaries are very close to my heart. It was at Animal Place, in fact, that I made the decision to go vegan in 2002 after 10 years of being a vegetarian. I immediately became a volunteer there and have spent many Saturdays working with the animals, doing health checks, mucking out stalls. I think sanctuaries for farmed animals are incredibly important to the movement because they bring omnivores face-to-face with the cows and the chickens and the pigs and the other animals who are killed to provide meat, eggs, and dairy foods. Once you meet these animals and hear their stories and learn about how the industries abuse them, I think it's impossible to go back to your old ways of eating, at least without thinking twice about the suffering. And these places, well, they inspire thoughtful discussion, and the animals serve as ambassadors for their cousins who are imprisoned in factory farms or in research labs. And I always advise activists to get some face time with the faces they're working so hard to protect.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea, and the topics we've discussed so far in activism are some of my favorites. I want to hear about some of your personal favorite types of animal activism that we haven't yet covered, and why are they your favorites?
Well, that's a good question. Obviously, as a writer, I love using the written word.
Of
my
course.
Activism. Yeah, that's actually how I got started as a social justice activist, writing letters
and
to editors.
And your book itself is activism.
Exactly.
There you go.
Exactly. That was kind of the culmination. I thought, well, I'm a writer. This is how I got started in activism, and writing a book was just a natural result of that. I have, as I said earlier, a whole chapter just on writing. And I encourage everyone to use that. Send letters to editors of your local papers, and these don't have to be in response to a recent article. For example, if the circus is coming to your town, you could write a letter about the exploitation of animals in entertainment. With the internet, we also have many opportunities to post blogs and comments online and include links to videos or important websites. And in fact, one of the easiest things that we can all do is add an auto signature to our emails so that whenever we send an email, we're also sending a link to an undercover video or a vegan website or an upcoming event. I think these are all excellent ways to get active.
In Chapter 11, you write about a very important topic in the realm of animal activism that can often be overlooked, and that is the emotional pushback that comes with fighting for the animals and recognizing that we humans are animals ourselves and that we need to care for ourselves as well. With the vast enormity of abuses that are continually happening to animals everywhere and knowing that we can't save them all, there's a large amount of guilt and stress that activists can get consumed by and feeling that they aren't doing enough for the animals. Can you talk to us about this guilt and despair and what we can do in terms of our thinking and actions to alleviate these feelings and to avoid burnout?
That's another good question. And I'm glad you brought it up. Burnout is one of the larger issues facing the animal rights movement, and I don't think we talk about it enough.
Mm-hmm.
It's often the result of prolonged exposure to suffering and injustice. It can feel a lot like depression. And to avoid getting burned out, I recommend we all start off by finding a good fit. In other words, match your style of campaigning with your strengths and interests. We should also make sure we're including short-term goals in our activism so that we're not becoming frustrated. And we really need to make time for ourselves. We need to resist the temptation to turn every hobby and outside interest into a way to help animals. I know I'm guilty of that, and I know a lot of your listeners probably are. And if we're really feeling close to burnout, it might be time to make a change. Perhaps you didn't find a good fit. Try mm-hmm. something different within the movement and try to keep your eye on the prize. Of course, we should also be getting plenty of rest, getting good nutrition, taking our B12 and omega-3 supplements, if we're vegan especially, and I hope all your listeners are, and spending quality time with our friends. Remember that activists are animals too.
That's all really great advice. I want to discuss another area of the work that you do, which is to raise awareness of the treatment of workers in farms and slaughterhouses. You wrote an article on this subject for the recent April issue of Veg News magazine this year called Injustice for All. So can you tell us about the injustice that the workers in this industry are faced with that you write about in the article? What should we as consumers and citizens of the society know about the conditions that these workers must deal with on an ongoing basis?
Well, our society has become disconnected with where our food comes from, and we give very little thought to the people who work on farms to bring us fresh produce. These farm workers are often not from the country in which they're working, and they've traveled long distances to perform really backbreaking work just so they can eke out a living and provide for their families. It's an injustice that in the U.S. at least, these workers have been exempted from many of the labor laws that protect other workers. And because of their legal status, many of these migrant workers are exploited. They're subjected to sexual harassment, to physical abuse. They work under extremely harsh conditions in inclement weather. In fact, many field workers have died from heat stroke. They're also exposed to agricultural chemicals like pesticides that have been shown to cause cancer and birth defects, and they have limited access to health care. A lot of these workers take the abuse because they fear losing their jobs.
And now, are they illegal immigrants as well? Is that often a reason?
I'm reluctant to use the word illegal or the term illegal immigrants. I refer to them as undocumented workers. They're here not necessarily working above ground, so to speak, but that's definitely an issue. They're definitely worried about losing their jobs because they're worried about being deported. And it's the same situation for people who work in slaughterhouses. It's tempting to think that these workers are heartless because they're killing animals all day, mm-hmm. and we'd certainly love to shut these places down, but most of the people are desperate and view this work as a last resort. It takes a toll on them physically and emotionally. They're screamed at. They're in constant fear of losing their jobs. And that shows you just how desperate they are for the work. Again, a large percent of these people are undocumented, and they'll never file a complaint, and employers know this.
And regarding the emotional traumatization that they're taking at work and being just desensitized, which you would be if you were, you know, murdering animals all day, right? Mm-hmm. You just have to deaden yourself to it. Your article talks about how they take that with them home. There's alcoholism and violence towards their spouses and children. So there's those issues as well. And I think that needs to be definitely recognized as well.
Yeah, there's high incidence of domestic abuse. They, as you said, they try to deaden themselves to the violence they're inflicting on other beings. It's not fun work. They work at an extremely frenzied pace. They're denied bathroom breaks. I spoke to one slaughterhouse mm-hmm. worker who told me it was not uncommon for workers to urinate right there on the equipment.
Yeah, I've read that before, too, on the kill floor, because I think the floor is all gross anyways, right?
Yeah.
So it's just some more
right.
secretions on the floor that they don't really care about. And there, I think I read in your article, and I've read in Gail Eisen's Slaughterhouse, which I'm sure you've read,
right.
About that as well, is they just don't have time. In your article, it says that they're processing as many as 400 cows per hour, which is industry standard now. It's an exhaustive pace. They do not have time to use the bathroom, which is just the basic, you know, it's a basic human right. And
right.
when you don't have time to do that at work, not only that, but your article says that the rate of repetitive motion injuries is 30 times higher in meat packers than the national average in industry. And if you can imagine these workers just doing the same action with their hand, for example, and getting carpal tunnel syndrome or that, because of the work that's so repetitive that they're doing all day, and having those injuries. And I think just workplace injuries in general are really high in slaughterhouses from what I've read. So there's a lot of different issues there when it comes to the meat industry. People often don't think about the workers in the slaughterhouses. And I think that needs to be recognized. When people say to animal rights activists, well, you should care about humans first, I always say it's all interconnected. This is one good example of what I mean by that.
Yeah, I'm always reminded of a quote by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who said that he wrote that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. So this world is not about a single issue. And really, as activists, we need to expand our circle of compassion and think not just about non-human animals, but about the humans too.
And it's all integrated. We're all, you know, we're all animals of this earth, right? We're all integrated together.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being on the show with us today, Mark, and for all the work you do as an activist for the animals. If you are in the Vancouver area and would like to meet Mark Hawthorne yourself, please do come to his book signing event on Saturday, May 21st from 2 to 4 p.m., which takes place at the Nice Shoes store at 3568 Fraser Street in Vancouver. You can find out more about Mark Hawthorne and Striking at the Roots at strikingattheroots.com. Thank you so much, Mark.
Thank you, and I just want to note that with me at the event is going to be Lauren Arnellis of the Food and Climate Project. She's going to be giving a talk that same night at 7 o'clock at the Vancouver Public Library, which is 350 West Georgia Street. And Lauren is going to be helping people understand the power of their food choices and how to use those choices to create a more just world.
Which I got to learn about yesterday when I talked to her. She'll be on our show next week, so excellent. I'm looking forward to that as well. Thanks so much, and have a good day.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
And on next week's show, we will talk with Lauren Arnellis of the Food Empowerment Project in advance of her food justice talk presented by Liberation BC at the Vancouver Public Library, as Mark just said. And that will be next Saturday, May 21st from 7 to 9 p.m., which is the same day that Mark, who Allison just finished interviewing, will be at Nice Shoes doing a book signing from 2 to 4 p.m. Don't miss your chance to see these two amazing activists who will be in Vancouver from California and are looking forward to meeting the locals. We will also have an interview with Melissa Elliott, who is the author of The Vegan Girl's Guide to Life, as well as the blog The Urban Housewife. And Allison, did you want to remind listeners about the book draw?
Sure. Very quickly, we are giving away one copy of Striking at the Roots by Mark Hawthorne. I'm sure you're all going to want to read it now after this talk. It's really it's a great book. It's a really easy read. There's so much good information in it. I encourage you to enter our draw. You can just send an email to radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. And as your entry, I want you to tell me what one of your favorite methods of animal activism is. And our deadline for entries is next Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. We'll be drawing the entries on the show next week, and then you can also enter on our wall on our Facebook page, where I've started I have some threads there where you can comment under. Again, let us know what one of your favorite methods of animal activism is. Anyone can enter this draw because the book will be mailed out this time. So that's all we have for now. I'm going to be playing a song by Green Beans called Meat Doesn't Grow on Trees, and this is in I guess in recognition of the upcoming World Week for the abolition of meat. Thank you. Take care, and we'll talk to you next week.
See ya.
Those that are children, the use of incident, very, very alarming, right under the inspection of the good, the harbor there, social facilities, and water. is a sad fact. We try to avoid like a dreaded disease that costs greater than special sauce. Pickles, onions, lettuce, and cheese. Meat doesn't grow.
It doesn't really grow.
Slices and franks and nuggets and patties and burgers and barbecues. Now it's a choice whether to steer clear, but if not, let's just understand that a life was taken to bring home the bacon that we hold in our hand. Instead we get flipped and the razzle jazz.
Radiation, it's the latest man-made thing. Comes inside your milk now, so let's everybody sing. It's raining radiation, it's raining toxic stuff. It's raining radiation, and I think we've had enough. Don't you think you've had enough? You know nukes make dirty stuff, and I think we've had enough.
Welcome to Radio EcoShock, to the program I Didn't Want to Make. I'm Alex Smith, and I have an important show ready for you about rapidly depleting oil supplies. Post-peak oil will change all of our lives in the next few years much sooner than we thought.